This is the Living Prophets Podcast, and I'm your host, Mark Maxmeister. Picking up from the last episode, where I concluded that the coronavirus outbreak and the global pandemic is very much less about health or the economy, it's much more about leadership and our moral fiber in the center. This is my story of discovering the things that I can do and that we can do together to battle the virus, but also battle ourselves. We can come together to comfort each other, to inspire each other, and to help each other feel more connected in this world, which is increasingly unfamiliar. Everything we thought was important, or everything that we thought we could take for granted as a stable part of our lives, is probably not going to be the way we thought it was. So what's in my daily routine? What do I do? Well, I have a four-year-old that is home from school permanently, and I structure my day because I still have a full-time job. From 9 to 12, I try to do my job, and he is either watching Sesame Street or using a reading app on the tablet or doing something that is minimally supervised so that I can get something done. And then when I finish with that, I spend the rest of the day as Montessori dad. That's a new thing for me. I've never wanted to be a Montessori teacher or a teacher of four-year-olds. I have taught university and high school students in Peace Corps, and it's just so different. So much of this is about focus and structure, and as far as I can tell, he seems to be doing better with a lot of structure and some focused activities and getting to do one new thing every afternoon. So I have a calendar of novel things. It's not just for four-year-olds. Anyone who's been cooped up week after week needs to structure some novelty into their lives. We live in a house. That house has a front door and a back door, and we can go outside, but I know friends in South Africa who can't even do that. So the more constrained we are, the more rules we have to follow, the more important it is for us to have that kind of structure. After the normal workday ends, my wife comes home. She helps either with Xander or with dinner. And then after dinner, I go back to work and I finish my workday from 7 to 10. I am extraordinarily blessed and lucky and privileged that at this moment I happen to have a job which allows me to move a significant portion of it into the evenings. Many people are not so lucky, and I think about them every day. And doing this podcast is my form of praying for those people that perhaps when I'm not talking about myself and I'm talking about the we and not the me, some small piece of this can inspire them to get through the next day and the next. ...2020 was the year of the bat, and from bats came a plague that would awake humanity to what would become its greatest hour. This is that story. Humans have always learned to discover beauty, especially when the unpredictability of life haunts us. My years in Peace Corps prepared me for the COVID-19 pandemic more than anything I experienced in America. You had to live among people who, by our skewed perspective here, had too little, to discover that their lives were rich and full of joy. Richer than ours, even. Let's talk about the plague. You know, the one from the Middle Ages. Everyone's heard about it, but we never really covered it in history class. Perhaps you heard the dates and the death toll, but these are the least interesting parts. It's how our humanity changed in the face of an apocalypse. The struggle against selfishness, the parts left out of the history books, those are what interest me. History repeats itself, and these past 100 years are the only century not to have a pandemic. This was the Golden Age, and how did we savor it? Well, that's for you to decide. The Black Plague didn't just strike once. It hit Eurasia in the year 1350, most likely starting from Kazakhstan or China, and spreading to ports everywhere else. But it never really went away. In every year from the year 1500 to 1850, at least one city was ravaged by plague somewhere. The bubonic plague struck the U.S. in the 19th century, with outbreaks here even as late as 1925. And there wasn't just one plague. There were at least three kinds of plagues carried by fleas. They were very lethal, between 80 and 99% fatal, depending on the variety. Compare that with 3.5% fatalities from COVID-19. These bacteria were so effective at killing humans that they went extinct. But archaeologists have later found remnants of them in ancient tombs so that we know which plagues were where. These plagues were also global. Half of the population of Europe died in a span of 5 years. There were so few people left that the fields regenerated and returned to forests, and archaeologists found evidence of a mini ice age in the records of that time because of it. 6,000 years ago, empires disappeared from similar plagues that wiped out half the population. This has been a recurring part of human history, and until science and medicine offered us a way to save lives in the mid-20th century, it was part of every generation's fears. But with that technology came a new responsibility. Humans had to be stewards of the earth and seek to live in balance with nature, rather than having nature lord over them. As true now as it was 7 centuries ago, overrunning the environment increases the chance of pandemics. But when we recognize and accept our true role and act accordingly, our greatest hour will begin. I wonder, did these past plagues lead people to come together and aspire to something greater? Or did it divide them and cause a decline among the survivors? History's answer has been both. When the first plague began, the French king's seers blamed the heavens. They said a conjunction of three planets caused the great pestilence in the air, and this idea became widespread across Europe. Muslim religious scholars taught that the plague was a martyrdom and mercy from God, assuring the believer's place in paradise. For non-believers, it was a punishment. Their doctors cautioned against trying to prevent or treat this disease sent by God. And in the year 2020, I've heard at least one televangelist say the same thing. History does repeat itself. They cited astrological forces, earthquakes, and the poisoning of wells by Jews as possible reasons. In Strasbourg, Mainz, and Cologne, France and Germany, thousands of Jews were murdered in retribution. Overall, 60 major and 150 smaller Jewish communities were annihilated. In the midst of this suffering and grief, we also find great artists at work. Shakespeare's plays were written and often closed due to the plague. When healers and leaders couldn't explain it, people turned to other ways to imbue life with meaning. The Renaissance blossomed out of this crisis of belief. Great artists started to paint. People commissioned great works of religious significance because they were looking for a new way to tell a story and give life meaning when life was unpredictable. But the greatness was not just in art. Many people made great sacrifices for each other. Can you imagine living in a time when a disease was nearly always fatal, and no one knew from whence it came and how it could be cured? But that contact with the sick was definitely bad, they all knew. Still, in cities where thousands were dying, someone would have to carry the dead to the mass graves, and they did. Burying the dead was incredibly risky, but it turned out probably that was one of the things that helped the plagues end sooner than otherwise. With the economy completely crushed, people had to share food and shelter to survive, and they did. We all have to sacrifice to live our values, and sometimes just to give ourselves a chance at survival. It also didn't escape my notice that part of the reason the plagues continued for hundreds of years is that as much as people knew that they were coming from ships abroad, those with the power to stop it would never sacrifice their own personal wealth and prosperity for the sake of the city and shut down that trade route. What I have noticed from history and from this story is that people have always wanted comfort and prosperity. And if they couldn't have that, They wanted to strive for meaning and purpose. And even if that is denied them, they'll pray for a life of peace and joy and solitude. And here we find that the great teachers are all showing us ways to find what we need most. Our bedrock of solace is within ourselves. Not that we don't deserve all of it, but these times are a reminder that life's purpose was never about comfort or prosperity. It was to bring that from within ourselves to create the world that we all imagine. That is spiritual activism. That is the theme of this entire podcast. It's not easy. There is no roadmap, but we can all learn from past experience and from great leaders and speakers and inspirations some little lessons of how to think outside of ourselves and create the world that we want to see. There was a parable from Jesus that was not included in all of the Gospels where he spoke about this idea. He said, "If your leaders say to you, 'Look, there's God's imperial rule in the sky,' well, then the birds of the sky will precede you. They'll get there first. If they say to you, 'No, it's in the sea,' well, then the fish of the sea will get there. Rather, God's imperial rule for the world is inside of you and outside of you and all around you. When you know yourself, then you will be known, and you will understand that you are children of the living Father. But if you do not know yourself, you will live in poverty, and you will be that poverty." I imagine that is a version of what it means to think about, in a time of crisis, the ways that we want to live intentionally, deliberately, and with purpose, and to be that example to others that shows that everything is going to turn out for the best. There will be suffering. There will be sacrifices. There will be loss and grief. But all of that can be borne if it is in pursuit of something worth having. What are those things in the world that are worth fighting for? I think for me, it's a sense of community and a sense of peace, harmony, avoiding war, not letting the forces that would divide us win, living out and as an example of how to not be divided. This is our finest hour. We just haven't recognized what we are supposed to become yet. The times are waiting for people of metal who are ready to take risks and make sacrifices, not to save themselves, but to save the ideas that we claim to hold dear. I believe communities are stronger together. Community doesn't mean we have to be in contact, but we do need to feel and share concern for strangers around us. We have to know that people are all right in our community. This love for strangers is the cornerstone of all great religions, and it will be the starting point for whatever sacrifices will be required of us in the days to come. The best person on Twitter that I've found to follow for these daily updates about how the world is looking and where we are going is the former head of Obamacare under President Obama, Andy Slavitt. And I'm cobbling together one of his threads, which I hope will continue to expand, which is just showing the vast outpouring of humanity and decency among people who are faced with the same challenges we all are. But instead of turning inward and thinking about how they can hoard or how they can build walls to keep the world out, they're going out in the world and finding that they have the ability to make it easier for others. So here are a collection of stories that came just from the last week through Andy Slavitt's Twitter feed for Sunday. The other days he talks about healthcare policy and what we can do in a disaster relief context, but on Sundays he sets it aside to talk about the best of us, our decency and humanity and common good as a community working together against a common threat. A distillery in Duluth, Minnesota, seeing an opportunity, converted the distillery from making alcohol to making hand sanitizer, and they're giving it away for free. There are going to be thousands of stories like this to lift us up, and if you're trying to find one or share one, you can look for hashtag the best of us on Twitter. Sobbing in Winn-Dixie, a man's card was declined. He was on the phone, fiddling frantically, trying to find money. A woman behind him stepped up and paid for all his groceries. "We all have times like this," she said, and left. Lincoln Park High School student Jessica Transy started a Meal Today, Meal Tomorrow program for her classmates who are not all assured a meal at home each day. She got her peers to buy gift cards from nearby restaurants, and the restaurants agreed to donate a second gift card to a classmate in need. Half the kids in her school come from low-income households in Chicago. This week, the New York Sikh community has cooked over 30,000 meals for those in self-isolation. In Detroit, mom-and-pop restaurants forced to close are now cooking free meals for the homeless instead. World Central Kitchen is giving away millions of meals across the U.S. They did this after the Puerto Rico earthquake, so they have the ability to kind of scale on a different level from mom-and-pop restaurants. 7-year-old Zohab Beg collected 6,000 masks from local hotels, which he then donated to Virginia hospitals. Unfortunately, because the headline for this in the newspaper started with "Muslim boy," it really sparked a controversy. It became about his religion and not about his actions. An anonymous donor dropped off $14,000 of gift cards for local small grocers and restaurants to share with neighbors. The note attached said, "Thank you for helping us distribute these gift cards to your families. This is an experiment with two purposes. Hopefully it helps preserve some jobs and keep the restaurants open a bit longer, and hopefully it will provide a nice alternative to home-cooked meals and uplift spirits a bit. If people ask, just say they were purchased by someone who loves the people of Charlottesville, Virginia." MIT teams hacked for 16 days to design a low-cost emergency ventilator, and then they gave away the designs to everyone on the internet for free so that people everywhere can make these things. If you're trying to find more stories like this about us working together, look for, on Twitter, hashtag TheBestOfUs or hashtag SpreadLoveNotViruses. This has been the Living Barofitz Podcast. I thank you for joining me, and I hope to speak with you again soon. I think, as a side note, I've been doing over 60 of these episodes, and I really don't know who listens to them. I know that there are several hundred people who are signed up, but I know nothing about them. If you would like to drop me a line, you can tweet at me, Mark Maxmeister, and I would love to hear your thoughts. That's MarkMaxmeister. That's my Twitter handle, and I check it regularly. Until next time, stay safe and stay sane. Ooh.